You're listening to this podcast, so I know you care about the war in Israel right now. And you've been reading the headlines. Massacre in Gaza. Genocide perpetrated by Hamas. No, by Israel. But if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know one thing. This stuff seems complicated. And honestly, no one can really just pick a side or decide an opinion without really learning, without really knowing what you're talking about. And that's where this podcast comes in. Check out Unpacking Israeli History, now in its sixth season. They have episodes with topics ranging from what is Hamas anyway, to whether Israel should ransom captured soldiers, and the history of Israel and its disengagement from Gaza in 2005. Unpacking Israeli History cuts through the noise and helps you understand Israel's present through understanding Israel's history. So, educate yourself. Learn the history behind the headlines. Find Unpacking Israeli History wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Amanda Borshaldan. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me. Today is Wednesday, January 20th, and I'm joined by our senior analyst, Chaviv Retegur, and more especially by our opinion and blogs editor, Miriam Herschlag. Thanks for coming, guys.
Great to be here.
Hi, Amanda. Good to have you on, Miriam.
Today, we're going to be focusing on our blogs platform, and Miriam has selected for us a few selections which illustrate the fallout of the storming of Capitol Hill and also the lead up to the inauguration of Joe Biden today. Now, Miriam, you selected, first of all, a very interesting and academic blog by Kenneth Stern. Can you explain just in broad strokes what this blog is about?
Yeah, sure. So Ken Stern, one of the great opportunities we have on this very large and open platform is the opportunity to bring experts who've given, who can, in addition to their perspectives, right, it's a first person platform, they can also give us some of their expertise. And Kenneth Stern is an expert actually in hate. He is perhaps what we might most be interested in knowing about him is that he authored the definition of anti-Semitism, and he
the IRA definition, correct?
Exactly, the one that is now become an interesting sort of political part of strategy to get that encoded in law. Interestingly, Ken Stern actually opposes that. So I have been interested in what he has to say on hatred in American life and politics since I heard his position some years ago on the definition that he authored. And he has written a piece called Can America Inoculate Against the Dire Threat of the Us Versus Them Culture? And he starts off talking about violent militias and how the violence in among white supremacists and Nazi-informed militias years ago started to cause academics and experts to start trying to analyze what this was in American life.
One of the lines that jumped out at me was when he was talking about the Branch Davidians and the Oklahoma bombing, you know, way back, right? And he said, right, what if the movements hadn't been fringe? Meaning, maybe we should have recognized this decades and decades and decades ago.
Well, he's sort of saying, what if you took the same driving forces, the same anger and rage and ideologies, and gave them a much, much larger platform and all kinds, and including, of course, the technology that we had today. Back then it was faxes and early bulletin boards and newsletters
carrier
that
pigeons
were mailed. Right. And today, of course, we have much massive ability for everyone to have an enormous megaphone. And he also says, at that time, there weren't elected officials that were echoing their grievances and their perspective and their information. So this is obviously, he's suggesting that it's a horse of a different color. And we certainly saw sort of one expression of that on January 6th at the Capitol.
Now, he published this yesterday, January 19th. Was this a piece that you commissioned from him, or did he submit it himself?
Oh, Ken contacted me, very much wanted this to come out as part of the work he's doing at the Bard Center for the Study of Hate. Obviously, it's a time when people are looking for ways to frame this. And what he's suggesting is essentially a Manhattan Project for approaching this in a multifocal, complex, nuanced way. This, you know, ability of an us versus them, impulse, which is a human impulse, to turn disagreements deadly. And he's saying, that at one point that he makes very vaguely in there, which I felt really took me, he doesn't go into it deeply, but he talks about, the response to hate not being, that love is not useful, but empathy is. And this idea of understanding where people are coming from is I think, a huge push in his work.
That's really fascinating. Now, I know that your platform has, 10,000 people who write here and there or quite regularly. How many people do you have so far?
Hundreds of people at any given time are writing on the platform. Over the last 9-10 years, we've had pieces by thousands, by more than 10,000 people. Perhaps a metric to think about would be that we publish more than 1,000 posts per month. So last year, since we had the end of the year, I got a chance to look at some numbers, and we published, I believe it was 13,400 posts over the year. It was a big year. People are home, people are isolated, and people are writing a lot. So that caused a 40% jump in what we had normally previous years had been publishing.
Miriam, I wanted to ask you, from the perspective of someone who sits on all of that opinion information that isn't journalists and isn't sort of the mm-hmm. professional punditocracy. Some of my best friends are the professional punditocracy, but still,
I wanted to ask you,
there is a feeling I get from the blogs, especially from the top ops that you select out to feature, of a real, two things, both a reckoning with how deeply America has divided, certainly since, you know, January 6th. Elchanan Pupko's, this Orthodox rabbi, his long and very, very interesting, you know, comment on orthodoxy falling head over heels for Trump and the costs in Democratic politics, the cost in their own local ability to, because they're all registered Republicans now, they no longer influence Democratic primaries in very heavily Democratic areas, and how the sort of general falling apart of American politics into these very, very narrow camps that don't speak to each other, that don't really know one another. There's less and less contact, physical, social contact between Democrats and Republicans. All of this reckoning happening. And I don't know. I don't exactly know what my question is. It strikes me that what really is now animating American Jewry? Is that why we're seeing it bubble to the surface so much? Is this a healthy process? Do you think there's something missing from it? How do you read America from sort of that prism of what we're seeing in the Times of Israel from that huge, you know, base of writers?
And just to build on Chaviv's question of rising to the top, in the case of Elchanan Pupko, he's quite prolific. He's a rabbi who lives in Beit Shemesh, I believe, who has some kind of following. But he is commenting on America while living here, which I found actually quite fascinating as well, though he is very tapped in, I would assume, to the Orthodox community there. But in this particular case, is he somebody that reached out to you and said, hey, look at my piece specifically? Or did you just come across it? Did it bubble to the top, as Chaviv said?
It caught my attention. Rabbi Pupko is a regular blogger on the site, and we have a lot of wonderful voices. you know, I really see this as a place that has it, that's quite open, and a forum for tremendous diversity. I just want to toot our horn and say that I think there are few places where you have open entry for an extremely wide variety these days of opinions and perspectives. What I liked about this, and people were paying attention to it before I even noticed it and featured it, is that on the one hand, it addresses something that is deeply important right now for the Jewish world. I think, you know, the division over politics, the fact that I believe it's a 74% of Orthodox American Jews voted for Trump and supported Trump and in both elections, is just, it's a huge thing in a way that, and I know that you got into this, Chaviv, in your article. This wasn't a split of opinions. This was a split in a whole world views, and in a very, very deep and profound way. What I liked, though, about Elchanan Popko's piece is that he was very pragmatic in his criticism. He was actually talking about those who supported the Republican platform and Trump for pragmatic and strategic reasons as having actually been wrong in their strategic analysis. So you didn't have to it wasn't so much, obviously the finger moralizing, finger wagging is, I think, in there. But what he was saying is that they had essentially cut off the branch that they were sitting on by putting themselves in so squarely into this camp.
And unnecessarily. That's what struck me. Unnecessarily. In other words, I hadn't thought about it in the way he presented it, but they identified with Trump so powerfully that they forgot that they all decided to, or many, not all, obviously, but many decided to register Republican in deep, 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 deep blue areas of New York, where they instantly lost their capacity to affect real political outcomes. And they did it out of identification.
Yeah. One of the things he says actually is pro-Israel voters failed to stand up for those who support Israel, which goes back to what you're saying about cutting off the branch they're sitting on.
Meaning those in the Democratic Party, by denouncing the Democrats, they helped radicalize or push the Democratic Party more anti-Israel, I think was
exactly. And also another point that I found really just so moving in a way is that it contributes to the destruction of the ability to respond to anti-Semitism, which before Corona was such a hot topic that in New York, there was such a large amount of targeting of visibly Jewish people, meaning the Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox communities. And what Elchanan seems to be saying here is that these actions, this identification with Trump, the burning of the masks at the beginning of the Corona pandemic, all of this is really harming the greater good.
Yeah, I think these are questions and debates that are really worth having. And I think, you know, this idea of, well, you supported Trump, you should have expected to be attacked, is obviously a hugely problematic idea. And nobody is saying anybody deserves to be attacked. And I'm not even sure it's correct. I just think it's worth putting out there. It was well articulated. You mentioned the fact that Rabbi Popko is living in Israel and writing about the American thing, which of course all of us on some level are doing. So first of all, the entire world is engaged in what happens in America. But I think more specifically, the Jewish world is so, you know, and I think even specifically the Orthodox Jewish world is very, very much going back and forth between the American and Israeli reality. And, you know, the Trump, a legacy has an enormous stamp in Israeli Jewish, particularly on the right experience. So we're very invested in this administration, obviously because of the Israel-America relationship, but more specifically in the Trump administration. And so these things, you know, are resonant here and they're resonant there.
So the final piece that we'll discuss, because our time is short, was written by Rina Magun, who has lived in Jerusalem for the past 25 years, but is from South Jersey. And she took a very personal approach in her plea, essentially, to those who had supported Trump. Okay, apologize and let's move on as a unified whole.
You know, I like posts. My personal preference is my real favorites are ones that shake up my assumptions and shake up readers' assumptions. This is a different kind of post that is cathartic. And what I mean by that is it's when somebody just speaks from the deep well, and this follows what we witnessed in the Capitol, and says something that they think to be so utterly true, and to put it in this sort of emotional way, which was, dear Trump supporting friends, we love you and forgive you, now apologize. This expectation that by witnessing what had happened, it was obvious, it would be obvious to all Trump supporters that this was a result of their supporting this person. And of course, that isn't what happened. So the one reason that that post, you know, it's an angry post that says, look what your guys did. You know, they breached the Capitol in this horrific attack. And it was so immediately apparent to me that readers don't see the same thing. And it really, you know, that that test, do you see the two profiles or do you see the goblet? You can't see them both at the same time. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
For sure. Or the blue dress or the white dress, all of
these. It's entirely that. And that the dress is a perfect example as well, Amanda. You know, we are looking at the same things and seeing completely different stories. And you really see that on the blogs. And it's very important, I think, because I'm immersed in all sides, I'm seeing it. You know, I know that it's an impossible ask to say, you know, it's here, you know, to expect people from the other side of the divide to have the aha moment that you fantasize that they're going to have. You know, it's and actually what I like about it is that it lays out the challenge that we have in front of us, which is if just saying, you see what happened and you supported that. If just saying that doesn't work, and by the way, I'm not sure, you know, maybe there are people who are saying, who woke up on January 7th and said, I maybe need to rethink where I'm at on this. But I think it's a big hurdle, and it's a sort of shows to me, and I find those fascinating. I agree that they're maybe not as deep and complex and nuanced, but there's a room for them. Also, it was a very, very emotional thing. And having an emotional piece of writing available to us, I think, is important. You know, it's not always about what's in our minds. It also, we need a process of whether it's grieving or raging. And that is part of what we also are doing on the blog platform.
Yep. Screaming into the wind is sometimes a very important thing to do. Now, our time is up. Thank you so much. Thank you, Miriam. Thank you, Chaviv.
Thank you. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raoul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.